A very warm welcome to you. This is Remember Palestine. My name's Amina Taylor, and you've joined the only program solely dedicated to the Palestinians and their struggle for justice and equality. On this week's show, there's outrage over the continued mistreatment of Palestinians placed in administrative detention by the Israeli authorities. This is especially heartbreaking when you consider women and children are included. We'll be speaking with a prominent anti-war activist on the need to keep the Palestinian issue in the spotlight and how we can get public and high-profile figures to stick their necks out above the parapet and champion Palestine and her people. For those of us who think the hunger strike is behind us, well, you may be surprised to hear that one talented footballer has been refusing food now for over 80 days. As Mahmoud Sarsak teethers on the brink of death, just why haven't we heard any more about this touching, moving story? All this and so much more to come. But first, many of you will not have heard the story of the talented Gazan footballer held by Israeli officials for over 3 years now. The story of Mahmoud Sarsak, it's all too familiar. This heart-wrenching report gives us an insight into how his family is coping.
Celebrations marking the end of the mass hunger strike may have been far too premature as Mahmoud Sarsak enters the 82nd day of his hunger strike. Mahmoud, who was an avid football player from Gaza, was detained by Israeli forces as an unlawful combatant. His mother recounts painful memories as she talks about her son and his love for the game.
I'm not happy that I'm eating and he's not eating or drinking at all. Whenever we have lunch together, we remember him. Whenever we drink a cup of tea, we remember him. When we eat sweets, we remember him. He used to like the food, the family gathering. He used to tell jokes.
Within 10 days after announcing the end of the strike, Israel renewed administrative detention orders for approximately 30 prisoners. Mahmoud Sarsak's distraught family has been left with only his football shirt, boots, and memorabilia for comfort.
He was in love with sports. For example, when we used to tell him, let's go to the market, he used to say, I am not going. I want to go to a match or football training. All his life is in the football field.
A young, healthy man whose only wish was to play football is now in danger of losing his life.
The doctor says that he must be transferred immediately to hospital in order to prevent unnecessary danger to his life. It is not certain, in case his condition deteriorates, the danger is a heart incident which can be sudden and severe, that the Israeli prison authority will be able to deal with it or evacuate him to hospital in time.
As Israel continues to violate the deal it signed with prisoners and Mahmoud Sarsak's condition worsens, an increase in violence may be imminent as demonstrators protest against administrative detention. The coming days will tell if member states of the United Nations will put pressure on Israel to end its policy of arbitrary detention.
We'll be following up that story a little later with our correspondent in Gaza. But before that, my next guest, Carol Turner, she's from Stop the War. And she's, well, never been quiet, shy or retiring on her views about bringing an end to occupation, ending the siege on Gaza and holding the international community to account. And she joins us now. Welcome. Thank you for being so patient with us today. First of all, your reaction to Mahmoud's story there.
Well, I think it's absolutely tragic. As I understand it from the reports I've read, he's close to death, he's losing consciousness. As you said in your introduction, it's over 80 days, which is a hell of a long time. And all of this, that talent, to be lost simply because the Israeli authorities are using detention in order to terrorise the Palestinian community is disgusting and a disgrace.
We don't seem to get a full handle on that. The idea that you can simply pick someone up, not charge them with anything, and then essentially just renew the 6 month permission to do with them as you please. I mean, under international law, this is a violation, surely.
Absolutely. As I understand it, Mahmoud's renewal has happened 8 times, I think I'm right.
Due
in
up
saying.
Again in August.
Yes. It's under international law, under the Geneva Conventions, special detention is allowed, but it's meant as in very exceptional circumstances, and it's legally constrained when you can use it and what you can do with it. In fact, what the Israeli government is doing, it is using it as a form of terror, keeping people On their toes, as it were. In fact, the interviews I've seen and read with Israeli spokespeople suggest that that these people who are on hunger strike are being called terrorists, and they're likening a hunger strike to a terrorist bombing or something like that. It's absolutely disgraceful. There's no doubt whatsoever that the way in which it's being used by Israel is against international law and indeed against all sense of decency or justice.
If this is such an outrage, Carol, why don't we hear more about just this situation as a whole? Even if you're not particularly interested in Mahmoud's individual case, the idea that this exists.
Yes, yes. Well, it took the BBC more than 3 weeks to even report on the fact that a hunger strike was taking place. And as I understand it, this hunger strike that has been happening since February was in fact the largest, the mass, biggest mass hunger strike in sort of recent times. And for the BBC not to report this is absolutely shocking. It is reporting it now very carefully. Very little comment from the Palestinian perspective or from the Palestinian Authority or other spokespeople, and an awful lot of comments from Israelis. I think the BBC is absolutely disgusting. Stop the War, the organisation I represent, and others, Palestine Solidarity Campaign and so on, have held protests outside the BBC. We've delivered letters of protests on this topic, and hopefully what we've done and the pressure that's building is having a little bit of impact on the British media here.
How does this play into trying to get those high-profile voices, people with clout politically or culturally, to have Palestine on the agenda? To say, hey guys, we know there's a lot of things vying for your attention right now. There's the Arab Spring, there are critical situations all across the globe, but we want you to consider this as being as important as the other issues here, if not central to the very essence of what's going on in the Middle East.
Well, I think in my opinion, in most people's opinion who are active around these issues, Palestine is central. There will be no justice and there'll certainly be no peace in the Middle East until the issue of Palestine is justly settled and they have their own territory, they're recognised as a state and so on. I think there are an increasing number of media personalities, celebrities and so on who are prepared to speak out. I think the problem in Britain is actually getting media coverage, which means not individuals but the structure of the sort of managerial structure of the news channels. I think that despite the fact that the lack of coverage is chronic, there is a sea change that's taken place in the last couple of years. First of all, with the Israeli attack on Gaza, and then that was followed by murders in the Mavi Marmara, I think have really alerted the world to what's going on. And although it's slow and it's very unsatisfactory, particularly for activists in the West Bank and in Gaza, it is changing, and I'm hopeful that will continue. I think that the world is becoming aware that the parallel between Israel and Palestine is the way in which the white South African government treated the black majority, and the word apartheid is being used more and more, and that's a good thing because it really alerts public opinion everywhere to how serious this situation is.
But there is still that fear. I mean, you only have to look at the case. For example, off the top of my head, Baroness Jenny Tong, you speak out in a party political situation, and it's such a hot potato that your own leader is saying, look, shut up about this, or I'm going to have to remove you from your position. That is censorship of the highest order. If a politician can't speak privately about something that's in the public domain, there's an example being set here. Be quiet about the things we want you to be quiet about, or your career, your livelihood might be at stake.
Yeah, no, absolutely, you're completely right. And a much smaller example, but the last time I appeared on TV making a comment on Palestine, Stop the War was inundated with antagonistic comments, sort of very, very aggressive. And I'm sure that's much worse for people who are better known. I think that, you are getting, you're beginning to see a change in the British Parliament and elsewhere. I think there's some changes coming in America as well. But it's very, very slow. That is the problem. But my Jewish friends tell me that as well as the public opinion changing in a general sense across the West, that's also affecting the Jewish diaspora. That there's a new generation of Jewish people who are just appalled by the fact that
this is being done in our name, and exactly. This is not what we want. Exactly. This is not what we stand for. Yeah. This is not who we are.
Yeah, quite so. And that's what a number of my Jewish friends tell me, and they read the Jewish press and they watch what's going on.
So what's the next stage here? If this is supposed to be a blitz on the public consciousness and you're trying to raise both awareness and non-violent action, you're trying to get people inspired, how do you try and do that?
Well, I don't think there's a get-rich-quick formula, unfortunately.
We would have probably clocked onto it by now. Yeah.
Someone would have noticed it. I think one just has to keep doing the sort of things that Palestine Solidarity Campaigns, Stop the War, and the other organisations that are involved. Keep protesting. We had a fortnight of protests outside Downing Street, outside the Prime Minister's office. About the hunger strikes recently, as I said just now, we went to the BBC to protest. It's simply a matter of whirring away drip by drip. What I'm saying is not that that's satisfactory, but that's the absolute bare minimum that one can do to see justice for Palestinians. And I think that the snowball has started to roll. I noticed, for instance, that the boycott and divestment campaign is also taking off. And if you look towards South Africa as a sort of a parallel, proportions guarded, that was a very important event in the case of South Africa, and hopefully it will become increasingly important for Palestine as well.
We'll be following that, Carol Turner. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this week's Global Resistance shows, as we've been discussing here, that the world is starting to wake up to the issue of Palestine, even if our leaders seem to be taking a little bit more convincing. Watch, be inspired, and perhaps send us the results of your efforts for future broadcasts.
One Voice Palestine youth leaders and activists in Faqoa chose a novel way of getting the attention of Israel. They released balloons inscribed with Arab Peace Initiative text into neighbouring occupied territories. This peaceful initiative was used to call on Israeli citizens to put pressure on their government to recognise the Arab Peace Initiative as the basis to solve the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The large peace group saw adults and young children getting involved. Holding placards and posters, they tried to draw attention to the settlement expansion policy and called for the release of Palestinian prisoners under administrative detention. A youth project aiming to give Palestinian youth opportunities to work and build successful careers through volunteering was organised by Juhud Association. 11 training workshops were conducted by the association, and it brought together Palestinian youth, experts, volunteers and universities. The initiative hopes to provide volunteering schemes to the youth so they can gain enough skills to work in the government and civil society organisations. Gazans pay their respects to their dead who were killed by Israeli forces between the 1960s and 1990s. The bodies of the martyrs were buried in Israel without their names. Numbers were used instead, which is a clear breach of human rights and international law. 91 bodies were returned to their families in Gaza and across the West Bank. The procession brought to light the critical issue of many more who are left behind, both alive and dead. They should also be returned to their families.
Joining me down the line now is our correspondent Ashraf Shannon from Gaza to give us an update on how Mahmoud Sarsak is doing and what the situation is on the ground. What else can you tell us, Ashraf?
Yes, I spoke to Mahmoud Sarsak's family. His mom says that his situation is very critical. She's afraid that she might not be able to see him alive. She was crying and weeping and saying that she doesn't want to see her son coming in a body bag. His 65-year-old mother last week fainted in front of the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross as she was there for the sit-in and solidarity with her son. and other Palestinian prisoners. His father is also having heart problems and also wishes to see his son back in their home in the southern Gaza Strip refugee camp of Rafah. Let me say something about Mahmoud. Mahmoud is a Palestinian athlete. He's a soccer player. He played for the Palestinian football or soccer team, and back in 2009 he went through the checkpoint to go to the West Bank to join a Palestinian team there, and he was arrested by Israeli authorities, and he was never charged with anything. They just kept renewing his administrative detention. He's been on hunger strike for almost 3 months. He's the, as far as I know, his body is the longest one in history to stay alive for that period of time while on hunger strike.
Ashraf, we thought this situation was behind us with the Palestinian hunger strikers. We thought there had been an agreement reached with Israel, and therefore these conditions were all being reviewed.
This is what everyone thought, but Israel, as usual, reneged on its agreements with Palestinians, as it usually did. And some of the prisoners refused to stop their hunger strike, including I remember Sir Halahle Biladi Diab. Sir Halahle was released, but Mahmoud Sarsak and there's another one, Mr. Rakhawi, are still on hunger strike. What we heard from sources from the lawyers is saying that the Israeli prison authority offered to release Mahmoud Sarsak, but he refused to stop the hunger strike because he's saying that they gave him oral promise. They did not have a writing. This is why Mahmoud refuses, because he dealt with the Israelis throughout these years, and he knows that they will go back on the promise.
All right, we'll leave it there, Ashraf. Thank you for bringing us up to date. Now, my next guest is the head of the Palestinian Society at the University of Westminster in London, my old university. And as another academic year draws to a close in this country, we want to know how students can be at the forefront of the movement to highlight the struggle of Palestinians. And Salil Khalil joins me now. Welcome to the program. Young lady going to my old school, I always like to see that. Is there an appetite for students to be rising up, having their voices heard? I thought you guys just sat around and watched television all day.
Well, it's partly that, and partly because of the diversity in university. And, you know, there's tons of societies, like political societies and just cultural societies. And when these merge together, it creates quite a platform for students. And you know, so Palestinian Society at my uni, we always try to keep it upbeat. We always try to put an event. We try to introduce the concept to new audiences.
How does that work? Because if somebody's never heard about the issue of Palestine and you need to sit down with them and explain from scratch, from the 40s onwards, look, this is the situation, this is why we believe it's unjust, join us. What's your usual reaction?
Well, usually we do get, oh, what's Palestine? And, you know,
you know your work is cut out for you then.
Yeah, we're kind of used to it now, to getting that. So usually we say, look, sign up to us and come to our next event. And we try to explain it there and then, because they might not come. They might be like, oh, yeah, you know, I might. But then usually we just show them pictures and we say, look, here's a documentary you can watch, 40 minutes max, and it'll kind of outline everything. I think videos especially are a brilliant way. We had like an entire week where we dedicated documentaries and films regarding Palestine, and people came out like, wow, like, you know, I didn't think it was that bad, and that's crazy, and I can't believe it. And I think it's the most effective way, especially into drawing new students who doesn't know anything about the political situation there.
What kind of activities do you do? You've mentioned screenings.
Yeah,
are there demos?
Well, we're actually kind of doing, we're starting a boycott campaign in our university, because our university uses G4S, the private security firm, who recently had an annual meeting in London. And they're complicit in providing prison infrastructure, which Mahmoud Sarsak is in right now, and so forth, and many, many more human rights violations. And so we're going to kind of start a campaign to address the fact that we want you to cancel your contract with this particular firm and find another one, because of its dealings with Israel and other human rights issues. So that's one campaign, and there was Apartheid Week, that's annual, and it happens across the UK. And it was very successful. It was a march, and it was a week dedicated to highlighting the apartheid traits of Israel. So that was putting up mock checkpoints across campuses, putting on lectures, inviting academics to talk about it, such as I Am Pape, and many more, and just documentaries again, and cultural nights as well, you know, where people can recite poetry, and kind of, we even do talks to Gaza, where we Skype with them, and students from the Islamic University of Gaza, we have a project ongoing like that, where just random kind of university students come together and Skype for an hour and just talk about the life, marriage, food, and then the bombings, the political climate, and things like that in general.
How do you think it's changed some of the students you've worked with?
I think it more people, like, the more you work with the Palestinian cause, like, the more you embed yourself within it, I think you start to grasp how serious and how ignored this issue is. Because most students, you know, they hear and they think, oh yeah, Israel, Palestine. It's become a norm. It's very normalised. Oh, it's been going on for 64 years. You know, it's just how it is. And we need to break that. We need to say, look, this is not normal. Just because it continues doesn't mean that we should treat it like anything else. We should kind of aim to actually break the myths and the misconceptions about the topic, such as it being a conflict and so forth. But ideally, we just kind of, we do, especially with the talking to students in Gaza, I would get students saying, wow, like, the more you the more personally, directly you're connected with them, the more you feel like, wow, this is hit home.
Imagine if London were cut off.
Exactly.
Yes.
So how would you? I can't. Yeah. They were like, they had generators because we couldn't, you know, they don't have electricity for like 12 hours every day. So they were telling us, and they were like, electricity, how do you go on the internet? How do you do your work? You know, I cannot live without my Xbox and mm-hmm. so forth and things like that. And they realised that, you know, they're very kind of in a situation that, you know, they admire them. They say, you know what, you're like, you're heroes. Like, I admire your strength and your power, because we can't do that. We can't live like that. And of course, the Palestinians are very humble, and they're like, oh no, you know.
Yeah, because when something exactly. is done like that mm-hmm. so often, you have to make do. Celine, you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you. Keep us posted. I didn't even get on to all the articles and the different stuff you do, but okay. We appreciate the work nonetheless.
No worries, thank you.
And that's all the time we've got on this week's program. Thank you so much for taking the opportunity to speak with us, and of course for showing your solidarity with Palestine and her people, wherever they may be. Thank you, of course, to my guests for their invaluable contributions. Until next time, I've been Amina Taylor. This has been Remember Palestine. See you soon. When you...